to make a celebration for me. It's gonna be like special for me. He say, oh, I teach you something, you know? I say, oh yeah, I can remember you teach me to do the backflip because my brother teach me how to do that. He say, yeah, I think it's gonna be like good for you. When you score, just try to do it. So that's the reason when I score, I used to do that every game when I score.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Welcome back to the Pitchside Podcast. I am Adam Ken. Producer AZ is keeping my voice coming through your speakers, straight into your eardrums, into your brain, giving you all the union knowledge. And we are talking right before Philly faces off with Toronto FC. It's a rematch of the first game of the season when Toronto knocked off the Union, and it was a rough one for Philly that day. 3-1, Michael Bradley had two goals. Marco Fabian had a penalty for Philly, but the Union, after really being the better team for much of the first half, gave up a goal in extra time to Michael Bradley, and then they just never really recovered it. It, I think, psychologically knocked them back a peg. And then after that game, there were questions about, hey, can they play this diamond? Are they giving up too much space? Sporting Kansas City, they go down a man. Marco Fabian with a red card. Let's say it's a great, incredible, phenomenal, fantastic, perfect call, because he definitely meant to step on Johnny Russell as he came down due to gravity. And after that, the Union were 0-2 to start the season. Since then, they have really rebounded. You've seen a team with a renewed confidence in their system. They trust in the style of play that they are using. Jim Curtin has got everyone on the same page. And Philly, since giving up 3 to Toronto, has only given up more than a goal to Kansas City in the next game, and then on the road to Los Angeles Galaxy win. I think another one of those, what you can just call, you know, phenomenal, perfect, unimpeachable calls, a penalty on Kai Wagner for, standing too close to Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And this is the sort of thing where you look back at the Union's record and you see only 2 games since that opener where they've given up more than one goal, and you're looking at a team with one of the best defensive records in the East. I mean, not quite what Atlanta's doing, but Philly also is one of only 2 teams with more than 20 goals, so they are getting it done on both sides of the ball. That's what has them in first place, and they've done it missing Marco Fabian for much of this run. They've done it with homegrown player Brendan Aaronson, who looks like he's recovering from an injury last game, stepping up, and they have also done it with Jamiro Montero coming into his own in the midfield. They've done it with all sorts of different guys scoring. Kasper Schaboko, really, 3 games in a row with a goal, and he looks like he could have had a couple more against New England. Of course, everyone looked like they could have had a couple more against New England. You've also seen Sergio Santos finally get back on the field, get on the score sheet, and man, did he look excited when he did it. There's something about that guy and the way he plays the game that is just really exciting to watch, whether he's scoring or not. He's just someone that if you're a defender, he puts you on the back foot immediately, not with the moves the way Elsinho does and the way Mishi Galina does. Jim Curtin said that, you know, Galina, somebody that probably scares defenders as much as anyone except Elsinho in training. But Santos, it's all about just the electric way he plays. Like, once a ball is over your head, you know he's coming at you fast. You know he's coming at you hard. You know if you take contact, he's coming in full steam. That's a really exciting thing to watch, and it's something that I think really fits with the work hard, next man up mentality the Union have adopted this year. And of course, you've also got Fafa Pico, who's finally got off the mark. He's someone who's come close a couple times this season, and now that he might get rolling, you are looking at a team that seems like it can get it done with multiple guys up front, and that's good given that they just sent David Akam to Columbus and lost Corey Burke for what could be a few months with a green card issue, and dealt Derek Jones to Nashville of USL Championship. Nashville, of course, is coming up to MLS next season, so 2020 be their first year, and the Union dealt Derek Jones's MLS rights to Nashville and also loaned him to Nashville for the remainder of this season. Jones, of course, a homegrown player, really stood out at the U20 World Cup in 2017, something that the Union just had a couple call-ups for. We'll talk about that later in the pod. But someone who just couldn't couldn't quite get past Harris Madunian, Warren Cravalho, Ale Bedoya on the depth chart. You know, he was a player with a ton of talent. I think everyone recognized that. But the fact that he could never quite make that next step, it's something where you look at it and you say, is it good to keep this guy around if he's not getting minutes? Is it good for him and is it good for the club? And ultimately, I think the deadline day deal means that both parties decided it was best for Jones for his career because he's reaching that age. Ernst Tanner's talked about this. When you reach the 22, 24 age range, that's where you should be really starting to round out into the player that you're going to be for the rest of your career, and that means you need minutes and you need him in a hurry. And so Jones hopefully will get those minutes now in Nashville. He's someone that when he's played down with Bethlehem Steel in the past has really often had his way with USL level defending. So it'll be fun to see him grow in a new environment. And the Union, of course, in dealing a com to Columbus and Jones to Nashville, free up some space, both some salary space and they gain some allocation money. And I think maybe most importantly, they get an international roster spot from Columbus as part of the Acom deal. And they get it for this season. And that's also important because it indicates that the Union are likely not done dealing. There's a chance when the summer transfer window opens that they could still be active. So it'll be really exciting to see what they do. If they continue to play well, they'll be in position to maybe add that one final piece that can take them to the next level and really keep them in contention to, you know, not just host a playoff game, which if you've watched any of Jim Curtin's mic'd ups, you know that he's telling his players he doesn't just want to reach the postseason this year. He wants a home playoff game in Talon Energy Stadium in front of the Philly fans. That is what he's pushing them to get. That's when you see the players go out there and fight like they did at the end of the Dallas match with Ale Bedoya's late goal. That's what's pushing them on, that desire to have a home playoff match here in Philly. And I think that freeing up some space puts the Union in a position to make a move if they need to do it in the summer. And hopefully they'll be there if they continue to play this way. I think there's no doubt they will be. So let's take another step back and look at what else is going on for the Union. They got the outgoings, the incomings, and also they're facing a stretch after Toronto where they have some Western Conference teams coming to town. You'll see three straight home games against Seattle, against Portland Timbers. That's Dollar Dog Night, by the way, if you are a Dollar Dog fan. We had a hot dog eating contest in the office the other day. I am proud to say that I believe I almost got six, but I did not win. And I am actually proud that I did not win because that would have been too much. That's all I can say. Dollar Dog Night against Portland. And then, of course, Keegan Rosenberry and a new interim head coach of Colorado, Connor Casey. They come in with the Rapids on May 29th to round out May. It's a really busy May for the Union, a lot of home games. If you want to see a team playing well, this is the time to do it during that homestand with the really talented Sounders coming in, followed by a Portland team that has only played on the road this year. So even though they're not in the playoff picture in the Western Conference right now, you saw what DC United did last year when they got on a home run, and Portland is looking to do the same thing this year. And then Colorado, who of course is winless as of this recording, but a team that that has some good pieces and just needs to figure it out now that they have Connor Casey and there's interim manager. And man, who would have ever expected Connor Casey managing a MLS team? And you know, all the best to him. What an awesome opportunity, and really hope he makes the most of it. He was such a fun guy to have in Philly when he was here. Of course, memorably made New York Red Bulls' Matt Miazga look silly on one of his goals. So we appreciate that, Connor, and wish you the best until May 29th. All right, so let's get to this week's interview. Michi Galina spoke to the Pitchside Pod. Now, I did not conduct this interview. Instead, Pitchside Pod contributor Tom Vai did. Tom Vai used to be the entire comms department for Bethlehem Steel up until this season. Now he's working as part of the digital team here at the Union. Just an excellent guy and someone who got close to Michi, really got to spend a lot of time with him during his time with Steel. And so he got Michi to open up about, you know, the things that brought him to Philly, his family, why he worked so hard, where he got that work ethic from, and also what he's hoping to do sort of as his career grows. You know, why soccer is so important to him, why it's such a big deal that he made the decision to come to Philadelphia, to come to America, really, from Democratic Republic of Congo, where his family still is. And he's been back there a couple times. You know, he's he's had a rough time in some moments, and yet he's someone that if you've listened to Brendan Burke, really, I mean, even if you just meet Michi after training, he just smiles. He's just a happy guy, and he spreads joy, and you can see it in the way teammates interact with him. You can see it in the way the coaches treat him. He's trained with the Union for a while now. I mean, I think they've seen his talent for quite some time, and now that he's adding goals to his game, it's really time for him to make the next step and begin contributing to the senior team. And I think he's someone that, while he has a long-term future in Philly, definitely someone who's going to push to get those late-game minutes quickly because of his speed, because of the way he can put defenders on the back foot. That's something you really want late in a game because it means that the opposition can't commit numbers forward when you're ahead. So now let's get right to it. Pitch Side Podcast interview with Michi Golina. I'll hand it off to Tom Vai at this point. Tom?
All right, folks, welcome back to the Pitch Side Podcast. I'm joined by Bethlehem Steel forward, Michi Golina. Michi, thank you for joining us. So, Michi, let's first start off. You know, you scored 7 goals last year with Bethlehem Steel. You got 1 just this past weekend with against the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. So, why soccer?
First of all, we say thank you for calling me to come here to join you guys. I play soccer because I love it, you know. I born with that talent, so that's the reason I play soccer.
When did you first start kicking around a ball?
When I was 10 years old. So I was trying just to play with my brother and in our house. So that's why I realized, oh, no, I can't play soccer when we grow up. So
you grew up in the Congo.
Yes.
So talk about that, getting that moment when you got to come over to the United States. What got you to that moment?
When I get like 15 years old, my national team, I was playing with some of academy in my country, and my national team, one of my coach, he worked with the national team U17. He saw me when I was practicing only in the academy, and they say, oh, I can bring Michi in the national team. So it took me from there. It called me to the national team U17. Yeah, and then we played some tournament only in the Congo. And it was some of the agent from here. They come watch that game. And they saw me. They say, oh, yeah, we can pick Michi and bring it in the United States. Yeah.
So you had started playing soccer when you were 10.
When I was 10.
Yeah. And within 5-6 years, you're on the national team, the youth national team of the Congo.
Yeah.
What was that like for you to go from never playing soccer with teammates to that? What was it like, that journey, so quickly? You know, most people, they start soccer, you know, when they're 4 or 5 to get into the academies and stuff.
Yeah, I think for me it was so quick because, you know, I'm sorry to say that, a lot of people tell me that I have like a big talent to me, so that's why it was so quick for me and to move, to make that movement to my academy, to national team.
And then you know, you come to the United States. What was it like leaving your family to come to the United States to play soccer?
It was hard for my family because my mom doesn't want me to go to play soccer. It was forcing me to go to school. And when he heard of me, I have to go to state, he said, oh, I don't want my son move to go there, to leave me here. So I was trying to explain him how life works. You know, mom, just give me that. I think it's a big opportunity for me. So let me go there and I can make money, one day I can bring you in United States. So,
and so you come to Florida, right? It was SEMA.
Yeah, in SEMA.
And so you get noticed. Not many people know this. So last year, you were playing with the Union a little bit. before anybody knew who Michi Galina was.
Yeah, in the preseason.
What was that like? Talk about that circumstance of how you got to be a part of the preseason.
Oh, yeah. I think it was the Duarte technique, the Orvan, he left already. So he came to Monre just to see the young player. And then we had a big tournament there. We played against U20 for Canada. So when he came there, he saw, oh, Michi, you're good. And he took me for a day and they say, I want you to come do the preseason with Union. So I was like nervous and say, oh, with the pro team? Oh, but I say, oh, yeah, okay, I can do that. So
once again, another one of those quick moments for you, you know, and then that, because you scored a goal, correct, in the preseason, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You had one of those goals, and then so that led you to signing your first pro contract with Bethlehem Steel on April 25th. What was that moment like when you told your parents, hey, I'm signing a contract?
That moment was, first, I can't forget that moment, because when Steel told me, Michi, you have to sign with us, I was, Jesus, I will be a professional? I was so nervous, and I was like, and then I called my family, I told my mom, she was, oh, Michi, I'm just so happy, and thank you, God, because my mama, she is Christian, so she pray a lot. She say, just thank you, God. I will just thank God a lot, and just go give all you know, work hard. I'm so happy and proud of you. So,
before we keep going with that story, what was it like, first off, talk about your transition just getting used to the United States. There had to be some differences for you coming from Africa to the U.S. What was the biggest challenge for you?
Yeah, it was a big challenge for me to get here in United States. You know, when I came here, my English was so bad. So I had to learn English first. So that moment was so hard for me in school. And so we have school in the morning, and after that practice in the field, I was like crazy because I can't understand. It was so hard for me, but I would just keep praying and keep working hard and try to learn. So,
and that's something that's really stuck with. If you guys ever get to see Michi on the field or at training, he's one of the hardest workers you'll ever see on the field. And where do you get that from? That just that working hard. Do you get that from your mom, brothers, dad?
I think it's from my mom, because she always told me to work hard. She always told me, because she told me, Michi, I don't have like something I can give you. You're too far than us, you know. I will always tell you to work hard. So I just keep it in my head. So that's why I keep working hard.
So you signed your first pro contract on April 25th, yeah, and you scored your first goal within a month. I remember that a curling ball across the middle against Red Bull too.
Yeah.
And that was the first time we got to see your famous celebration. Yeah. So to the people that don't know, what is your celebration?
I do the backflip in my celebration. I think it's my brother. He told me, Michi, one day I was talking to my brother. I was saying, oh, I have to make a celebration for me. It's going to be like special for me. He said, oh, I teach you something, you know? I say, oh, yeah, I can remember you teach me to do the backflip, because my brother teach me how to do that. He say, I think it's going to be like good for you. When you score, just try to do it. So that's the reason when I score, I used to do that every game when I score.
Well, that's pretty cool. Now, you seem really close with your family. Just talk about that. Your brother teaches you the backflip, the hard work that you get from your mother. You know, not a lot of people know you had a bit of a tragedy last year and you missed some time with the team. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think last year I lost my father. So that moment was so hard for me, and I left the team here because I think they sent me back home to go like see what going on there. Yeah, so that moment was so hard for me, and I'm sorry I can't talk about it.
That's fine. Yeah. I know. Did James reach out to you at all? You know, he had the same thing happen a couple years ago. Chambers?
Yeah. He told me that. He gave me a lot of advice before I go back to Congo. He said he get the same thing, so it's not easy. Yeah.
So you come back, you help the team get into the playoffs.
Yeah.
And what was it like being in that game when you knew, hey, we get to go to the playoffs now?
You know, when I come back, first of all, I was feeling like ready, you know. My mom told me, Michi, before I come back here, my mom told me, she told me, Michi, you see, we just lost your father. You just lost your father now. So now you are like father of this family. So just go and keep working, and I hope you will do the best thing. So that's the reason when I come back here, just give all in.
Does that put a little extra pressure on you? Because you're only 18 and you've been told you're now like the father of the family.
Yeah, sometimes I feel some pressure on me, but it's that life, you know. I think it's some kid like younger than me, they have this responsibility. So I think sometimes I feel like I'm young and I like all of my family looking at me. Sometimes I feel some pressure, but I cannot put it here. I just forget about that. I have to work in hard.
So is it peaceful for you when you get to go on the pitch? You don't have to worry about family or what's happening in life. You can just focus on the ball and scoring the goals?
Focus on the ball and score the goals.
Yes. And then the celebrations, right?
Yeah, in the celebration. After that, I can think about family. But in the field, focus on the ball and score, do the backflip. Yeah.
So in that playoff game, you actually... Steele was down 1-0, gave up a goal in the first half, and you helped rally the troops in this, getting a big goal in the second half. What was it like? Because it was a whipped ball across the, right near the goal line, and you make the far post run and just tap it in. What was going through your head as you see that play?
I was feeling that. I don't know how to say that. I was feeling that thing before. I was feeling that goal. Sorry, I was feeling it. So I can score that game. I can score. And then when I saw the movement from Santi Moa, Nanko give the ball to Santi. Santi go, I say, oh, now I have just to run in the box. So I just make the sprint in the box, and then was it a good moment? Ball coming to me, and then I just hit it in the field.
Even in the pouring rain, you know, did it make it a little special that, you know, you're on the road and a rivalry and you get to score that goal? And not only did you tie it, but it was the first Steele playoff goal. But you guys were probably more focused on the win, right?
Yeah.
So what was it like, you know, you go down again in extra time?
Yeah.
You played the entire 120 minutes. So Chambers with the rocket that everyone knows right off the post and in. Talk about that moment when you saw the ball just clink off and cross the line.
But I can say it was like, I don't know how to say that, but I was, like I say, I was feeling something on me. I would say, oh, I can change that game. So when I saw that opportunity and Santi crossed the ball, I say, here, I will just run in the box and try to score. Yeah.
Now you missed the next game due to injury, and so was that a hunger for you during this off season? Because now you got to go to preseason with the first team. You've been training a lot with the first team. So, what was it like, you know, being back in Florida as a member of the first team? Pretty much, you got to be in Florida again, where it all started, where you got seen for the first time, and now you were regularly training with the first team. What was it? So, in 1 year, you went from sidelines and the new guy to just part of the group. What was it like for you?
Yeah, I think it was like, it was like good for me and to make that movement. So I was feeling like, oh, first when I come here to Bethlehem, when I sent to Bethlehem, in my head I say, I will not stay for a long time in Bethlehem. I have to go prove and move. So it was like, I was happy for that movement to Bethlehem to come training to Philadelphia for the first team.
Are there any guys on the first team that have really been close to you and helped you make this transition to training a little bit more with them?
Everybody. Yeah, for sure. Everybody.
Well, all right. We appreciate it, Michi. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Tom, thank you so much. That was Tom Vai conducting a Pitchside Podcast interview with Michi Galina. And Michi, of course, the newest signing for Philadelphia Union, came from Bethlehem Steel, 19-year-old. He plays all across the front line, and really he is electric when he's on the ball. His tactical awareness has continued to get better. Fastest brace in Steel history. If you watched Ernst Tanner's statement about him, he said, you know, this kid's got a really high ceiling, just needs to start to learn how to play his position, how to get his defensive cues right. And that's always the last thing to come for most players. So I think you can expect a lot from Michi in the coming seasons with Philadelphia. And also just, you know, a great human being to have in the locker room in Philadelphia itself, just as a part of the city. He's someone that you really just wish nothing but the best for, because he wishes nothing but the best for you, even if he has never met you before. That's just the type of person he is. Okay, so let's talk about one other bit of news for the Union this week, and that is the U-20 national team call-ups for Matt Riel and Mark McKenzie. McKenzie, of course, has struggled with some injury issues and then appendicitis this season, hasn't gotten all the minutes that he wanted, and now he has a chance to go with Matt Riel, who was captain of the U-20s during some of the CONCACAF championship qualifying. Go to the U-20 World Cup. This is an amazing opportunity for these guys and something that they've definitely earned with their hard work on the training field. And it's also a great chance for them to show the coaching staff that when they are in a high-pressure situation, they can come through. So I think what you're going to see from both Matt and from Mark are guys who really want to just grab the bull by the horns, so to speak, and make the most of this opportunity by showing that as guys who have played professionally for a while now, they are ready to take on some of the best young players in the world. And you know, defenders, it's difficult because you don't get to score that incredible game-winning goal a lot of the time. But you do have to stop guys who are hoping to become the next guy that scores the game-winning goal on the, you know, Champions League stage. These are a lot of players going to this U-20 World Cup are the next generation of top talent for their countries. Mm-hmm. And they're on the verge of or have already taken the next step into their first teams. And it's going to be a big challenge for Mark and Matt. But really, they're two guys who, I mean, you saw Matt being named captain for the qualifying by Todd Ramos. You know, someone who has some leadership ability. Mark, I think if you've ever heard him speak, if you've ever been around him, you know that he is a charismatic guy. And he's someone who is gonna command a room and calm down a back line in these high-pressure situations. So those two guys, as they go on their way, hopefully we'll be able to talk to them before they go. But if not, you know, just wish them all the best, because this is something that I know, having spoken with both of them, something they're extremely excited about, a chance to really go and represent their country and, you know, wear the stars and stripes proudly and prove that they really are part of the next generation of top talent for the United States. And they are some of the guys that'll take the next step and represent their senior national team. Of course, Mark already has one senior national team call up back in January, but both he and Matt are going to look to get that call up and that first cap for the senior team soon. And this is just a great opportunity to show that you can do what it takes in front of Todd Ramos, a guy who knows, you know, what it takes to play for the U.S. senior national team. So wish those guys nothing but the best. And hopefully when they return, they will be in ship shape, ready to go for the Union, and can show what they have, what they are capable of bringing on the MLS stage. That is it for this week's Pitchside Podcast. Please, 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 please rate, subscribe, share this pod Let everyone know about it. If you are a social butterfly, tell your friends. Tonight out at the pub, out at the club, wherever you are, out at your Mother's Day dinners or whatever you are up to, let people know that the Pitch Side Pod is here. We've got some great interviews coming up. Hopefully you can check out some of the ones we've just completed. Anthony Watson, the skeleton racer for Jamaica, huge Union fan from South Jersey, just one of the more inspiring guys I've ever spoken to. Tommy Wilson, director of the Union Academy, a great interview there. We've got some other interviews already in the bag and coming up that I think are going to be really fun. And of course, some new content from the pod. We're going to debut some new forms of the pod soon. So keep an eye out, keep your ear to the ground and your eye to the sky, wherever you put your eye when you're looking for what's coming up. No pterodactyls out there, so you don't have to keep an eye to the sky. That's some, evolution talk for you. But keep aware of new versions of the pod coming your way soon. Until then, I am Adam Cann. Producer AZ, thank you for keeping me rolling here. Remember, rate, subscribe, share, let people know about the Pitch Side Pod because the Union are here to stay. Thanks a lot. See you later.